This is episode 180, recorded September 30th, 2013.
Greetings, all.
Hello, hello.
Kelly's back.
Yeah, hi. Where was I?
You were sick. You couldn't talk because you're
not
remember.
Right. Yeah. That was uncomfortable. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Clank.
That's okay. We're going to keep that in there anyway.
Okay.
Just for Clank's sake.
Sorry, Clank. Okay. We're kind of slowly inching our way back, technologically speaking.
Last week we had a computer, but no Kelly. This week we have both.
Yes, although the computer doesn't have the template with, like, the music and stuff in it.
That's
yet.
That's true, and if I manage, I'll put it in post-production.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
So, we'll see how it goes, yep. But we're still plugging along.
We are. Yep, let's dive in.
Okay, I think it might be a waiting in kind of day.
Okay, well, let's wait in
but
cautiously.
We can wait in cautiously.
Nibble at our toes.
Yes, make sure nothing vicious eats our toes. Okay, we have Sean in Asheville, North Carolina, and Tom in Provo, and furnace. Did I say that right?
I have no idea.
Not like the heater kind of furnace.
Like
F-E-R-N-A-S. Furnace.
Yep.
Maybe I can say that. I'll say furnace.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, from YouTube. And Dr. Ball.
On the North Shore of Boston.
As opposed to, you know, the South Shore.
Well, I just think that's kind of cool and
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, Sean.
Yeah. What does Sean say?
He says, life is in the way here. That life does that.
It does indeed.
Yes. He says, you've put out 2 episodes since I last wrote. Great job. Thanks for the filter advice for the Danny O'Fry. They're doing well. I actually put them in a 5-gallon tank for now. More on them later. Quick question on Walter Worm. Sometimes when I'm starting a new culture, it will develop a film and smell like it is almost curdled milk. Any thoughts there? I'm using cooked oatmeal with yeast for the medium.
Mm.
And he has a... we were talking about other aquarium podcasts. And he says there's Aquaromania.
Aquaromania.
Yeah. And he says he gets great guests, and he covers fresh and salt water, and they put a
link up.
A link up, so we'll put that up.
I actually listened to that one. It's a good one. I like
it.
The only reason why I didn't mention it last time is because I didn't think of it.
It ran away out of your brain.
Yeah, it ran away out of my brain, exactly. But, yeah, that's a good one to put on your list.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite monthly. It's a little bit, you know...
Sporadic,
but it's good.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's approximately monthly, but I don't think there's been one out. Anyway,
Pet Life Radio, was that, they do other stuff too?
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff. Like when I was on a guest with on Bob Tart's show a couple times.
About Hiro
and about the shrimp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Pet Life Radio too.
So Pet Life Radio is in charge of like lots of different podcasts?
Uh-huh,
I see.
And that's one of them, and that's
okay.
Their very themed one.
I see. Okay, so Walter Worm Cultures.
Okay, so... I've got some notes here to consult, just to remind me to cover everything. I actually emailed Sean about this, but I think there are probably enough of you out there who culture nematodes. This could be useful to you, because Walter worms, banana worms, microworms, whatever, they all do the same thing, so this applies equally to all of those. The film that's on the top of the culture and the smell that you described usually occur when there's a lack of oxygen in the culture, and often this is... logically enough, because there's too much CO2 in the culture, and as Sean mentioned in a follow-up email, the CO2 is heavier than air, and so it just pushes the oxygen out, heavier than atmospheric air, including, you know, nitrogen and oxygen, so it pushes that out, and there's just not enough oxygen in there. That can happen when there's too much yeast in the medium, originally. You put too much in there.
So it's making too much CO2.
You'll make a ton of CO2,
okay.
And that will flood the culture with it. Or sometimes there's just inadequate ventilation in the culture. Sometimes the ventilation holes, which were previously adequate, become inadequate, and worms climb up the side and plug them.
Oh.
That can happen. Or you can be carrying the culture and the medium sloshes and it gets up there and gums up the holes.
Plugs up the holes.
Yeah. And it can also happen if the culture just gets too warm.
Then it's producing more CO2.
The yeast grows faster and, you know, overtakes everything. So several of those can lead to the same problem, basically. And here's one thing that I mentioned to Sean that helped me. I never add active yeast to the cultures anymore. And
what do you mean active yeast?
I never add, like, you know, the granulated yeast that you had
that
to
you would
bread.
Make bread with?
Right.
What do you put in it?
Well, there are
enough. You just don't put any yeast.
I don't put the yeast in because there are enough live yeast cells when you add worms to a new culture, you know, from your old culture. There are some live yeast cells in there. But there aren't very many. But there are enough. And the culture...
So, wait, this is when you're...
Subculture.
What do you do at the very beginning, then?
You have to get worms from somewhere. Right.
And they just come with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There are live yeast cells in that initial culture you start with.
Okay.
And there aren't very many, like I said, because the worms eat them. But there are enough that you the yeast starts growing slowly, but the worms can keep up with it. And they gradually increase, but so do the worms, and so it works out.
Okay.
You've got equilibrium, more or less. Of course, the culture then takes a few days longer to produce because there's not that much food at the beginning for the worms, but there's less danger of CO2 flooding the culture and crashing it.
So just make sure you subculture with enough time to be productive by the time that you need it.
Right, and you can also just add a little bit of brewer's yeast or nutritional yeast to the culture. I often do that, and it works fine, because then the worms can start eating that right away. Because essentially, brewer's yeast is actually the same species as active baker's yeast, but it's been deactivated.
Hmm.
And it's dead.
Tastes good, though.
Yeah?
Not with worms on it.
Not with worms on it, but... No, it's... So it's there ready to eat. They can start eating it right away, but it's not going to overwhelm the culture. So there you go.
Okay.
And then he was thinking, when he emailed me back, he thought that it might have actually had something to do with yeast, and he said he had started a new culture with minimal yeast, and so I said in my response that basically it was right on the CO2 flooding being the issue, and that ventilation in a Walter worm or microworm or banana worm culture is a balancing act, because too little ventilation, they die. No oxygen, not enough oxygen. Too much, and they won't clamp the sides of the container for harvesting.
Mm.
So if you add ventilation to a culture and notice there are lots of active worms, but they're not really climbing, you can try reducing the ventilation a little bit. Or you can put a little piece of paper towel or coffee filter on top of the medium and see if they climb onto that, and then you can wipe some worms right after that with a cotton swab. So those are some ideas for him.
Alrighty, hopefully that helps.
Thank you for contributing, Sean, and hopefully that helps you and other worm culturing listeners.
Okay.
So who's next? I think it's Anthony, isn't it?
Yes, he was not in my list at the top.
He's not on your list?
No.
Oh, no, sorry about that. He's from Oregon.
Okay, well, here. Anthony from Monmouth, Oregon. I'm adding you to the list.
Okay.
You are listed.
Sorry you didn't get in the top list.
Okay.
I didn't mean that. He's new, by the way.
Oh,
Anthony's
okay.
Anthony's new. Contributor, so welcome to Aquarimax.
Indeed. He says, good day, Aquarimax. I found your podcast at the beginning of summer and have since downloaded and listened to you all the way up to date. I have African cichlids in a 50-gallon tank, and I'm making my own canister filter system. I'm making it out of PVC piping with three chambers, one for physical, one for chemical, and one for biological. Here's where the problem is. What do I use to glue it all together? I have 3-inch tubes with 1-inch holes in the sides for 1-inch pipes to join the chambers. Standard aquarium sealant isn't robust enough, I feel. However, what I would like to use will kill my fish from leaching poisons. Please help in recommending a substance to glue with.
I'm wondering what you would like to use, what you're thinking of using. But I think there are many PVC-specific solvents that you can use that will essentially cause the PVC, the polyvinyl chloride, sort of, it bonds with this stuff, and once you're done bonding it, it's, you know, once the solvent goes away, it's there, it's solid, it's a really strong joint, and it's not likely to do a whole lot for your fish in terms of dangerous things. It's pretty safe once that's happened.
Where do you get, just like at the hardware store?
Yeah. Yeah, the same place you get the pipes.
And what's the chemical called?
I can't remember.
Or brands,
it's
or
like PVC glue or PVC cement or whatever you call it. They
okay.
have several different types. You just make sure you get one that is okay for drinkable water, and you make sure it's dry before you use it, and you should be okay.
Dry before you put the filter back in.
Yeah, yeah. Once it's dried,
back
it's usually pretty safe. So. that's what I would do. Find something that's made for use with pipes that are used to carry drinkable water for humans. And
okay.
It should be okay.
It's a good idea. Okay, well, now.
So and thank you, Anthony, for joining us.
Yes. Now we have Tom.
Okay.
Okay. And he says he ordered a pH controller and will send us regular updates. What's a pH controller?
Okay. Well, you kind of missed this last week.
I did.
But a couple of weeks ago, he emailed us saying he was looking into CO2 possibilities for his tank.
Remember okay, that? I remember that.
Yeah. And he said that the PVC... Where did I get that PVC? CO2.
It's from the last
one. CO2 system that he was looking at, he went ahead and bought one. Okay. CO2
just
regulator.
Okay, so not a do-it-yourself.
No, he's not doing the yeast one. Probably based partly on your recommendation. But he'd not do so.
Because it's stinky!
It can be quite stinky. And he got the one that you get a tank, and you hook it up to the tank, and it has the solenoid and all this stuff.
Okay.
So he had part of what he needed, but he was wondering, how can I keep this from killing my fish? And he said, well, that is a real concern. With something that can pump out that much CO2, so it would be nice to get a pH probe and controller. Basically, you stick the probe in the water, and it measures the pH, and it allows the regulator to turn on when the pH is at a certain level, because the CO2 directly affects the pH. And so,
okay, I have. Can we back up a minute?
We can.
Maybe I'm having a brain cloud. Okay. I don't know. The CO2. Thingy machine deal.
Uh-huh.
It's made for fish tanks.
Yes.
Why is it going to kill fish?
Well, the thing is, the part that he had was the regulator, which is, it's got the tank and it's hooked up to a valve that will send bubbles of CO2 through. But the thing is, that's a lot of CO2, and you can control it a little bit, but.
The one that he bought is too big for the tank, or
no?
I'm just why if it's made it. If it's made to do this, why is it dangerous? That's
okay. It's made to release a certain amount of CO2 into the tank, right?
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's just address one of the scenarios, and that will help. Okay. One of the possible scenarios is during the day when you have a tank full of plants under a whole bunch of light with lots of lovely nutrients in the water, they're going to be using that CO2, collecting it and actively using it, right?
Plants. Okay.
Keeping it from concentrating too much in the water to some extent.
Okay.
Okay. At night, the plants are going to stop doing that. They're going to start releasing CO2 and pulling oxygen out of the water.
Okay.
So you can imagine what that would do.
But the machine is still going?
The machine is still going. Okay.
Why don't they put these things on a timer or something?
See, that's one scenario. Okay,
you can imagine. Don't they hire you to do their product development?
No,
that's my question.
No, what I'm saying is, people do it. They do put them on a timer.
But they don't come with a timer?
Oh, some of them do. It depends on what kind of kits you buy.
Okay.
Some of them come with a timer. The one that Tom bought did not come with a timer. Presumably, I don't believe it.
Seems like they ought to just do that. I mean, if you're, I don't know.
Well, there are plenty of sets you can buy that, like, you can buy a fully automated or a semi-automated one. The semi-automated ones typically come with a timer. The fully automated ones don't need a timer, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay.
Because they have the pH controller, I'll tell you right now.
Okay.
That he was talking about. So it's constantly monitoring the pH of the water, and when it goes above and below certain values, you can tell it to turn the machine on.
So it's like a thermostat, but for pH and CO2.
Yeah, it's a carbon dioxide stat. Kind of. So that's basically what
CO2 stat.
So it costs a lot of money, but it does what it's supposed to do. Keeps your pH within a certain narrow range, which is nice because the fish don't like sudden fluctuations in pH, which is part of the problem with using a timer, because you will get pH fluctuations that way. Not as great.
Because it's producing and then it's just not producing instead of...
Gradual, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and it does kind of... You know, the water doesn't change immediately as soon as you turn it off, because there's a lot of CO2 dissolved in water that has to slowly outgas over the night. And it changes less than if you were to just leave it on, possibly, because the plant's pulling it out and then the plant's not pulling it out. You know, that might be worse, depending on how much CO2 you're doing. But anyway, yeah.
Okay.
So he's got this controller.
That makes a little bit more sense now.
And he's going to give us some updates on how that goes.
Okay.
And that will be very welcome.
And I'm going to say it would be time for the break if we had our... break, but we don't.
Okay, so
let's okay,
just
look, look, I'm saying break time. Okay, if you need to go to the bathroom, you can go right now. If you need to go get some more popcorn.
Does anybody listen, eat popcorn when they listen to our show?
I don't know, but you have to cover all the options.
Yeah, some people are probably jogging. They could jog past a popcorn.
Okay, if you need to stretch. Okay, break's done. We're back.
Okay, we're back. Okay. So, that's where we are with that. Does that really make sense, or are you just...
No, that makes more sense now. Okay. I didn't know how it worked.
No, that's fine.
This is my job, right?
Oh, it is.
I ask the questions.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't do that in any sort of negative way. I just wanted to make sure that I had explained it adequately.
Yes, that makes more sense now.
Okay.
Okay, we have Fernas.
Okay. What does Fernas say?
He's talking about the video, but I did not see the message, the video that he sent the message on.
Oh, it's, you so know, the one
it's
we
on
did
YouTube.
On Beta's,
the bed is
one,
growing
week
up.
Week 1
or?
To week 14.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Spread, yeah.
Okay, he says that's a really great video. Can see all the steps of the growing Beta fish. One question, when you keep individual fish in the small tanks without any kind of filtration, how much water changes do you need to make?
Every day.
Is it possible for a single male betta to live happily in a 4 or 5 liter tank just by himself? Thanks in advance and congratulations for your work on these fish.
Well, thank you. And I would say not exactly. It's difficult to define happy, you know, living happily, but 4 to 5 liters is about just under and just over 1.25 U.S. gallons.
So pretty small.
Fairly small, but they can do okay. Like the one I have at work that, you know, has been there for years.
Nigel.
A couple of years, Nigel, and he's doing fine in a tank of that size. Of course, the tank is heated and gets pretty frequent water changes, but it's possible. But the one in my personal office is in a 5 gallon planted tank, also heated to about 80 degrees, and he's, I think, probably doing better.
Happier.
Probably enjoys that more.
So maybe a little bit more space would
but
be
but it can be done. I mean, there are plenty of breeders who, you know, keep most of their fish in 1/2 gallon or sometimes even 1/4. And when we were raising the batch that we bred, we kept them in. We tried to get quart jars or bigger, but some of them were 1/2 gallon, but most of them were quart jars. And they did okay, but of course we were doing water changes every day, and that was a permanent home for them. So there you go.
Just while they were growing.
Yeah, but I'm glad that Fernas enjoyed it. Yeah. And I'm not sure, I think he listens to the show, but I'm not entirely certain.
Okay. Okay, one more. We have Dr. Bob. He says, it appears that the white clumps on the red macroalgae are no longer growing. I don't know if this is good or bad. I have included a photo in case this helps you or others to identify this stuff. The picture's not the greatest. I find it tough to get good focused aquarium shots. I also included a picture of a healthy red algae cluster. These seem to be the only algae that are not consumed in this tide pool tank.
Yeah. Well, those pictures will be up on the page, so you can check it. The page for this episode. I think this is episode 180, didn't we say that?
Yes.
Yeah, we should turn around and record the rest of the show backwards.
What?
Because it's 180. Okay, anyway. Where was I? Oh, yes, the pictures will be up on the page, and so you can check those out. I did take a look at the pictures, and I'm still not certain what the white stuff is. It could still be a sponge, but it could be something else, too. But if anybody else who has a little bit more expertise in that area might shed some light on the subject for Dr. Bob, that would be most welcome. So please check that out.
Mm-hmm. He's saying he finds it tough to get good focused aquarium shots. Seems like we've done a couple shows on that, haven't we?
We have talked about that, but it is difficult.
Yeah. I don't remember
easy.
What episode number it is.
I don't know either.
It'd be in the like the tags, yeah. Though, wouldn't it?
Well, the picture of his bed came out really nice. Mm-hmm. But does he talk about that just there, too?
I don't know. I'll forge ahead here. He says, last week I picked up a 55-gallon tank and hood that someone had put out to the curb, much to the dismay of my wife. It came with an AquaClear 70 power head that needs a new impeller, which is on order, an Aquatech 30 to 60 hang on the back that operates nicely, and 2 UG plates with risers. What's UG?
Underground.
Oh, right. Okay. I cleaned it up, re-siliconed the upper frame that had come loose, and tested the tank for leaks. I left it on the deck for a full 24 hours before emptying it and bringing it into the basement. I built a 30-inch high stand using 2x4s and plywood, screwed and glued. I have not yet put doors on it, but I may in the future. So, I have an empty tank that I need to assemble. I have never owned a tank this large. I had a 30-gallon back about 30 years ago. I never bought big tanks because of the maintenance. He says, remember my musings on cleaning tanks back in the day?
I do indeed.
Let's say I want to use this to keep native freshwater pond fish and inverts, like small sunfish, killie, snails, or crayfish. What would be the best filtering setup for this tank? Should I trash the UG plates? I know that UG is old tech, but some people still swear by them. Is the Aquatech hang on the back a good filtering choice? Do I need to invest in a canister? What would be the best substrate for the biological filtering component? Says, I'm going to take my time with this project. I will likely not have fish until December, and that depends on the weather. I may not have fish until spring if I do go the native route.
Well, if he's going for pond fish, those are significantly easier to do than, say, river fish. Because the pond fish usually have a lot more tolerance in terms of temperature and temperature fluctuations, but they can stand warmer situations. So they might not need a chiller, although they might not need a heater. They probably wouldn't need a heater, but they probably won't need a chiller either. A lot of them anyway, things like sunfish and whatnot, crayfish. I would say the best filtering setup depends on what you're doing, I guess, in what you decide ultimately to do. The undergravel filter, the thing about undergravel filters really is that a lot of people, when they first came out, had the sort of attitude that out of sight, out of mind, in terms of the gunk that they sucked up, and that was the real problem. It's not that undergravel filters per se, there's any big evil about them. It's just that people would let them get full of detritus and then they were worthless. And you know, the gravel would get full of detritus and it wouldn't be flowing anymore. And the under the plates would be, you know, gobs of detritus, and that was all awful because it's still affecting water quality. Mm-hmm. And that was the real problem.
Okay.
If you have one, say a reverse flow one, you put power heads on those risers, and so water is actually flowing up through the gravel instead of flowing down into the gravel. That
so
can help
wash
keep
it a little better.
Detritus out of the, to some degree, out from under the gravel. And then you have other filters that are picking up the detritus that it's pushing out. And that can really help keep things clean. So
okay,
that's one option. Another is just to make sure that you gravel wash regularly. And if you're just doing pond fish, you know, normal aquarium gravel is okay. It's not a big deal, really. It kind of depends on whether you're doing planted or not, too, what kind of substrate you want. If you want to get fancy with planted things, I wouldn't probably use the undergravel filter plates because they interfere with the rooting of a lot of plants that have you know, heavy root systems. If you're doing things like Anubias and Java fern, it doesn't really matter. You can do that anyway because they're not doing a whole lot of rooting in the gravel. So I would say the Aquatech is not my favorite filter. But it's not bad. It's kind of like a bio wheel without the wheel or the bio. It's that's what it is. Because if you look at one, actually, it looks like a bio wheel filter, that the old style, at least, bio wheel filter, where the bio wheel is gone. It's not there. It's not a bad filter, though. And you don't need to invest in a canister. I've run 55 successfully without one, but it can be a nice thing. I mean, in some ways, they're really good.
Does it kind of depend on what he puts in it?
Mm-hmm. And how much flow he wants and all that sort of thing. But just normal gravel would be fine in terms of biological filter component. You might want a little bit more surface turbulence than you're going to get with an Aquatech if you're going to get some native fish.
They like surface turbulence?
A little, you know, just keep the oxygen up and stuff. So something like the bio wheel might not be bad, or, it really does depend on what he's getting, because some things couldn't care less, and other things are a little more picky. So, but it's good that you're looking into, you know, doing some research first, and of course, NANFA is a good place to go. Mm-hmm. North American Native Fish Association, I believe is what it stands for, and I know he's aware of that, because we've talked to him about it. Be a good resource there. And I always have to give a disclaimer. I know you'd already think of this, but just because we're talking about native fish, everybody, if you're thinking about native fish, always check your local state and, you know, city, county laws on collecting your own and or owning native fish. Mm-hmm. Some places are really strict.
Right.
And some couldn't care less. So, always a good thing to check.
Okay, he says also, on a related topic, what is your opinion on using Seachem Prime and or Stability to establish and maintain a new system?
I haven't used Stability. I have used Seachem Prime extensively. I use it now. I've used it for years. I like it. It stinks, but I like it.
Oh, that's the stinky stuff?
It's one of the stinky things.
It's like skunk rotten eggs, that one.
Yes, it is. It smells really bad, but it's useful and it works. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's one of its touted features is that it detoxifies, you know, some of the byproducts of biological activity. It helps detoxify ammonia and nitrate, I think it says nitrate. Anyway, it detoxifies ammonia and nitrite, which is a good thing. That's what it says mm-hmm. on the bottle there. And I use it. I don't consider it as a, you know, okay, my fish are fine because I'm using this. I don't need to worry
it's
about cycling. I never think of it in those terms. But I do use it while I'm cycling, and I don't think it causes any problem. I mean, I've used it in tanks and, you know, tested the tank and watched it still cycle even though I use it. So I don't think it interferes with the cycle at all. And it's one of its advertised qualities is that it doesn't interfere with biological cycle.
There you go.
It's fine to use. And I would still cycle fishlessly while I use it, of course. But I don't think that's what he's asking.
Mm-hmm.
And with Stability, I can't really comment because I haven't used it.
Has anybody else used it?
But if anybody else has, let us know. I have used some of the bacterial products out there, and I don't think they hurt, and I think there are probably some that do better than others, but in my opinion, I still try to cycle fishlessly and just don't put anything in there until you're getting nitrates and zero ammonia and zero nitrites.
Right.
Which I'm sure Dr. Bob was doing anyway. But, yeah, they do help, I think. I think they're beneficial. The Seachem products, I tend to like those
mm-hmm.
in general, so I can't comment specifically on Stability. I do use Prime while I cycle.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay. I think that's everything for tonight.
Is it really?
Yes, indeed.
Hmm. Well, there's this bit where he says he likes our listener Q&A show format. And he enjoys our interactions together.
I know. You know what? I think maybe we have good chemistry.
Yeah.
You should go out with me sometime.
Okay. I'll pick you up on that one. Oh, look. And he has got a PS. He included a photo. I included a photo of our Betta. My granddaughter calls him Dory.
Is he blue?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, there you go.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but
I mean,
that's
I am
cute.
Pretty colorblind, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so
look.
We can put the photo up, too.
I tried to show you the pictures, and it's not working. But it's a good picture, too. It's in focus. It's a nice looking fish.
Oh, we should put it up.
So everybody check out the pictures on mm-hmm. the show page. And hopefully, if I don't have music on this episode, it'll be on the next one.
We're hoping to get our old
computer
brain back so we can access some of our, you know, stuff.
Stuff, including the show.
Yeah.
The framework.
The music
format,
and...
The music and all that.
Yeah.
So, until we meet again...
May the fish
be with you.